Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
You receive the atomic bird to the ass.
Bird. Oh boy, that sounded bad.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Hey, hey, hey. King Shazoo's the devil. All
Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Awima wa, awima wa, awima wa, awima wa, awima wa, awima wa. nothing happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women moan boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights,
and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
The Turbo! All rise for King Shazam the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!
Hello everybody, it's old King Shazam the Turbo. I'm sitting around the round table with my honorable knights and hope y'all doing well out there and staying warm and all that jazz.
Dame.
And Dame Shannon, sorry about that. You know, never mind. I have no excuses. You guys were going to flog the king earlier.
Well, it's not that Thomas was going to be off with your head, dude.
Oh, see, there we go. Well, moving right along. boy, that's a...
Very quickly to get away from the guillotine.
Yeah, changing that subject real quick, huh? Anyway, I probably deserve a flogging or two. Especially after a few things I might have said the last day or so. But anyway, moving right along. We talked about last week about sitting down and writing the most profound letter piece. And Dame Shannon's boy actually shared one with us that he wrote. And that was a wonderful deal. And ever since we've actually started the idea of writing the most profound letter of peace, I've struggled with this process, because one side of me wants to go up there and just tell them what's what and this and that, and you know, and it would get pretty it would be a pretty spicy letter by the time I got done with it. And so as I'm sitting here contemplating on what to say and how to say it, I mean, to this day, I don't have pen to paper yet, but I have my general idea what I want to do now, and that essentially is to pose it in a form of a question, you know, like, for instance, have I, if I'm looking back on my life, have I served my community, have I served my family, have I served my God, or have I served the world in a positive manner since I've taken office, you know, or since I've had me personally been in my life or whatever. And that's about the closest I could come up to without trying to go into some sort of epic rant on what it is that I don't like about them. What's your guys' thought on the matter there?
I have to agree about, I have been sitting here and I'm like, I want to write my letter. There is so much to say, but as you said, it's hard not to be like, oh, well, you need to change this, you need to change that, instead of, you know, and I guess I kind of take it from how Z-Man put it, you know, he just said, you know, we're all mean, and we need to be more loving and caring, basically, towards one another. And so, I agree with you, it's definitely a challenge.
But it's a challenge.
Like it.
It's a challenge in my mind worth taking up because just trying to write the most profound letter of peace, that's a chore in itself, you know. But we're going against some mindsets that's been around for a long time, you know. And I put my question in there about, you know, have I served my God? But not necessarily all of them have a God, and maybe some of their gods are
right.
in the opposite direction. But you know, that coming from my own personal deal there. However, you know, it's like I said. Sitting down trying to contemplate on how to actually formulate the words that will, you know, open up their mind, touch their heart, so to speak, and get them to thinking about, you know, what it is that they've been doing in office all along. Have they fulfilled their oath of office? Have they left a good lasting legacy, a decent legacy for their own personal children and families, you know?
Maybe you could put it in that sense of where you're kind of asking them questions, but more like you're wanting them to, you know, kind of relive what they've been through and have they done what they said they were going to do?
Yeah.
Is it for themselves or is it for, you know, everyone?
And to not lay that, essentially that axe on their back or anything like that, I was basically going to formulate it as is, I'm asking myself the question, and I'm just letting them hear me ask myself the question, you know? You think that's
well, that's kind of good. That's a good, yeah. I like that.
Rhetorical questions.
That way, it's not necessarily accusatory. It's just a reflection as I'm asking myself the questions. Me personally, have I done everything that I can to serve humanity, to serve my own spiritual journey or whatever, you know, just to get their mind to thinking, you know, if we could actually get these individuals to read this particular profound letter of peace. Would it get their mind to ticking? Would they understand where we're coming from? You know, because in my view, I want to get through that door before we get over the cliff. You know what I mean?
It's not so much as them reading it as it is all of us going through it and listening to ourselves too and speaking to our own hearts also. And so, you know, we hope that they do read it. I really hope that they do. I hope that all of them read it. And I know that we can use words instead of you can use words like, this is how this makes me feel. When I see this world, this is what I feel like. When I look at my grandchild, this is what I feel. You know, it's hurt, it's pain. I watch this. You know, I feel when I see a soldier that, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
And you don't have to use you. You know, you did this, you did that.
I think that is a good formulation for a letter. I think that's a good platform to stand on because I believe that everybody can tell somebody how they feel. And so with that said, Coltus mentioned, you know, asking in the form of a rhetorical question, you know, I'm essentially asking myself in front of them, have I done these things? And this is how I feel about things that I see going on in the world. You know, what can I do to make it better?
Yeah, that's a lot better way of looking at it, I guess. And maybe that's where our whole, you know, pausing and looking at it, and we're just like, okay, what are we going to say? Because I have sat here and thought, okay, how am I going to put this without it being accusatory? Because, you know, I'm learning myself, you know, not to be so accusatory towards people.
Well, and I think this thing has a double-edged sword, so to speak, because it actually, while you're writing that letter, kind of gives you time to contemplate on yourself to what you could do to actually help the process, you know? Because, you know,
absolutely.
Like it or not, we do send them up there as our representatives, but we are the government, we are the people, so we are responsible to some extent for allowing them to do the things that they've done. So by asking ourselves, what have I done to make this situation better, while asking them at the same time, essentially in front of them via a letter, you know, what have they done to make this situation better, then I think it would open up minds on both sides of the spectrum and, you know, throw a real huge positive ripple in the pond. Am I wrong?
No, I think that's great.
Well, it took me a whole week to figure out that.
I'm right there with you. I don't know. What do you think, Coltis? Have you? I mean, cough.
Poor guy. He feels like I did yesterday. I bet.
An hour of sleep in 2 days.
Whee! What about you, Thomas?
I hate to say it, but I think this world has poured way too much venom into me to actively participate in that. But I see it as being so beneficial. There's no way I would get in the way of it.
See, you know? this is your chance to maybe try to take a step back from that, Thomas, and you know, try to come at it from a bit of a different angle. You know, I mean, we all have hatred for the government. We all have hatred for the handful of families out there that control most of the money and the energy and all the rest of it. You know, we all feel that, man. You're not alone. Like, you know, I mean, I could sit here and write a letter that would abuse the heck out of them. I can sit here, I can do that in 5 minutes.
Yeah, we could duplicate the book of bad words and send it on to them, and that would be essentially how the average Joe feels about the representation that they've received.
Yeah.
But that's not what we want to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's our chance to take a step back from all of that and all that drama and put it in a little bit of perspective, both ourselves and what they're doing, because not everyone can lay claim to, you know, well, pretty much no one can lay claim to being perfect.
No.
And not everyone can lay claim to, you know, being helpful to humanity. A lot of us hinder humanity without deliberately doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, we get on the radio a lot, and we talk about positive solutions and stuff, and, you know, sometimes we have to talk about the negative in order to ensure that there is a positive to the factor there. But, you know, I have kind of been in situations to where we were talking about things in the world, and it just seemed like it was a sled ride downhill, so to speak, because it's easy to point out all the negativity that goes on in the world and to find the positive, the little golden nuggets in life. It's like a treasure hunt in the world that we live in today. And so with that said, I can understand 100% why Thomas would feel the way that he does about that deal, and why it would be difficult for him to sit down and try to write a positive message of hope. But my view is on why that I would want to personally write me one, even though I still have some animosity against the government as they have represented us in not necessarily a good manner, is that I look at my grandchildren, and I can't look into those eyes knowing what I know now, that if we keep on the same path that we are, that they're not going to grow up in a good world. They're not going to know true freedom, you know? What do you think, Thomas?
Sorry, I'm not sure what either of you said, because you were both talking at the same time.
He said, what do you think, Thomas?
I think I'm being put on the spot.
Yeah.
No. But seriously, I mean, you know, I'm not a, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm not passive enough for this sort of thing. I'm more of a, I'm going to write something that's got solutions and send it out to all the people. You know, here's some things you can do to, you know, to end this tyranny that's over you without having to pick up a gun, without having to run out in the street and, you know, burn yourself on a street corner with protest signs. These are things that are much more effective than that, and you get to actually live a healthy, happy life while you're doing it. You know, they help you in the process as well as solving the world's problems. You know, like, you know, don't willingly send your tax money in. You know, claim exempt on everything, and then, you know, gunny sack that money away, so if they do come and knock it on your door, they're not dragging you off for it, but if they forget to come by and get you, you get to actually keep that, and maybe you can go out then, you know, 5 or 6 years down the road, and you see somebody on the side of the road that really needs help that could, you know, could actually be somebody, but, you know, something has basically befouled them, and you can help correct that and then, you know, get them back into a productive member of society instead of being somebody laying on the side of the road starving to death, you know?
So launder it into bitcoins and claim a gambling habit?
Well, you don't even have to do that. I mean, literally, you can just claim exempt and, you know...
Depending on what country you're in.
Well, I was going to say, I think it matters everywhere, because there is no country where the government is bigger than the people. The governing body is always smaller than the body that it governs.
Exactly. There's a very, very small percentage who are in control, and it's kind of like there's a picture out there floating around on the internet, and there's a man there at the on his soapbox who is representing the government, and he's standing on a plank that's hanging over a precipice, and all the people are standing on the other end of the board on the solid land. Basically, it's just a step to the left and bye-bye, buddy, you know?
Right.
We're the only thing holding him up. We are.
Right.
We are the only thing holding him up.
Well, and that's the thing, though, is the government is basically that angry, evil, vile wolf in us that if you just stop feeding it, the good wolf in society will win.
Well,
yeah.
You just got to stop feeding it. Stop feeding
you know what?
It. Either that or, you know, don't... find other ways to make what you need without having to work for a job to do it, where they get to see what you're doing and they get to tax you, and only work enough of that to basically take care of the essentials.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, from
recently in New Zealand, we're reading a story the other day where they've gone where a particular school has basically. Removed most of you know how they're just getting like ridiculous with schoolyard rules, you know, like you can't climb a tree anymore, you know, like we're trying to wrap all these kids up in cotton wool, and you know, they've basically removed all of these, you know, idiot proof rules from the school, and the kids are allowed to just go out and play and climb trees and do what they do, and they find that because of that they're able to, you know, wear themselves out during these play sessions, and then when they go back inside, they're able to concentrate and sit down and, you know, do their schoolwork. One thing I see a lot amongst us is because we detach ourselves from this, you know, we tend to help each other a lot more. Now, I foresee that even though a lot of people are probably sitting back thinking to themselves, dude, you know, you need a government. Without a government, who's going to fix the roads? Who's going to control the companies? I don't know.
The question is,
we'll
who did all that stuff before the government was there? Yeah,
exactly.
I mean,
yeah,
we don't need the government. We can live a completely anarchical system because people don't like being mistreated.
Exactly.
And that will stop people from being mistreated, not a government. Anytime you take a small group of people and put a very large task on them, they're going to fail.
Well, let's...
So the government comes along to fix the roads. Well, what state are the roads really in?
Well, Thomas, from what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, your letter would be best served to be written to the people, you know, because you said that you feel poisoned against the system, and so writing a letter such as what we're talking about to the system would not be a very good option for you personally, but maybe if you sat down and penned a letter that if you could get it out to every single person with the information that you feel would benefit them, as if they did, like you said, you know, not paying their taxes and putting their money in the bank or whatever and claiming exempt, you know, maybe two letters need to go out. Maybe one letter that we send out for the hope and peace, and then maybe the other letter to the actual people themselves, so that they can see that, yeah, if the government doesn't read the letters that we sent in for hope and peace, there are options.
Right.
But
and that's an idea.
We have to understand, too, is that, first of all, nobody's letter is going to be the same as the other.
No.
And Thomas, I don't think that your letter is going to be wrong in any sense.
Definitely.
I think that because you've been affected, we all have been affected differently by everything. Something we all also need to remember is that the government, all those are people too.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't really have to be a separate letter.
You're getting to the point where the short end of the stick, basically, or the letter that I would be putting out there is, hey, you guys, you know, you're all saying you're government, but the truth is, you're people. And guess what? That means you have family. So why don't you put that gun down? Why don't you put that stick down? Why don't you put down whatever it is you're using to try to control people, the controls for that drone, and go home and take care of your family?
And I think you just found your angle, Tom.
You know? What's that?
Yeah, I think you just found your angle for your letter, dude.
Yeah.
And here's a man with solutions who's just joined us here at the Knights of the Round Table. He's Mr. Mark Dante.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
I'm going well. I haven't had any time for the last few days, and sorry, Shannon, I've got to catch up with you tomorrow.
Oh, it's okay.
About our little art project. But hi, everybody, and I'll just sit here on the side. I've just been corresponding with a Pakistani inventor who's put a challenge out that tall engineers of the world can come and test his magnetic motor generator. So I thought, why not? So I said, name the time and place, and I'll be there. So
all
we'll
right.
see if he takes me up.
That must be the one that I seen the video this, last night where they had the permanent magnet motor, and he was lifting it up, showing all the different things, trying to show that he didn't have no extra wires or whatever. Is that the one you're talking about?
That surely is, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Right. That would be awesome. If that one there really works, I would love to see that firsthand. I mean, I keep a skeptical eye, but at the same time, I don't want to close my mind to the possibility, because I do believe that in the right configuration, it is possible.
Well, I believe everything's possible. I just ain't seen one run yet, and I saw one very similar in Africa years ago. And we had a TUV engineer, and we had engineers. We had a friend of mine, Jim Dunn, from America, another engineer, Brian, from Australia, and we got there, and I said to the engineer who was done the testing and wrote a report that it's real, said, the generator's driving the magnetic motor. That's the motor. He said, what? And I could tell by the tension. So what I want to see with this one is a video shot with just the magnetic motor spinning all by itself.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's the first thing. And I can think of 50 other ways to fake it, but I'm not trying to be skeptical. I'm not trying to be down. I've just seen the way they pull these little party tricks. But if it's real, good luck to them. I said, look, all I want to do is get the data and let the people then form their opinion. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all I'm about.
Yeah. Guys, I went to Geneva. I went to Geneva Inventors Exhibition in April this year. There was some Turkish guy with one of these big magnetic motors. And for whatever technical reason, it wouldn't work at the exhibition, which was really irritating. I went all the way to see that thing.
There's always a technical issue, isn't there?
Well, let's hope that's not the case. Let's hope that's not the case with that deal. Anyway,
that one's a bit of a fraud. Anyway, I'll shut up on the side. Just wanted to say hello to everybody. I'll sit in. I'll only comment if a free energy thing comes up. But just one final little funny story. I like little funny stories occasionally. I was up in this remote region, not that remote, but it's very secure here, called Angak Dam. We're doing food relief program and figuring out what we can do. They've got no electricity. They've got no nothing. And we had a great day with them. Very happy people. They live off the land, literally, in the rainforest. They're wonderful, wonderful people. And we had a great day with them. And then I thought, these people have no TVs, no radios, very limited education opportunities. They live a simple life. But boy, I was so happy. We're singing along and we're doing like karaoke and all the rest. They had a great day. Then today, in contrast, I'm at this really flash restaurant. I mean, it was unbelievable, you know, like chandeliers and all that. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to get a busload of these people and just bring them down as is? Put them in this restaurant, just fill the place up. They wouldn't even know how to use the knives and forks, you know.
Yep.
They wouldn't know how to... And when I say that, I'm not being derogatory to these people. They're very smart people. They're very spiritual people. They're highly intelligent. They can live off the land. They got skills we never had. But I thought, wouldn't it be great just to throw them in with all these affluent people in there and all these flash foods? Wouldn't it be great just to do something like that one day? Grab the people and put them in there, then get 50 people out of that restaurant that normally eat there and put them in their environment.
Now, there's the interesting part. Take the 50 who are from the civilized world, as it were, and put them out there in the scrub and say, hey, they can do it. Your turn.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see for sure. My only concern would be to be tainting the lives of those that are used to actually being out there in the real world. What would it be like if they were actually having people come serve them food and all that kind of stuff? Because I think that they found a way to make their life wonderful no matter what their circumstance, whether they had electricity or not. They were happy enough to be singing and jubilant and all that. You know, what would go through their mind if suddenly everything was given to them? You know, would it ruin their?
That Chaz is you got the money. You've hit the nail, money on the nail, or nail on the head, or whatever it is. You've hit the nail. We're very, very aware of things like that. Like, are we intruding? How much? But I'll finish off my last little point from that meeting yesterday. There's a lady who on an island, this big lake and island area, and she thought she'd come over, wasn't sure, and they got these little canoes, and they got a little motor on them, actually. It's quite cool. And the wind was up, and the water was rough, and she's got three toddlers. I'm talking, you know, two-year-old to five-year-old. And I'm sitting there, I'm having this story translated, and she says, I decided to come, but my children can't swim. And in these waters, the boat could just flip over. This would be a good pop boat solution if you come up with one. Anyway, I thought, well, what did she do? She got empty soft drink bottles. They don't have soft drinks up there for sale, but you know, like the 2 litre, or what do you call them, half gallon, or whatever you call them in America, soft drink bottles, empty ones, and tied them around their back. Huh. So that acts as a life vest. So if a canoe tips over, the kids are going to be bobbing around on the water using empty Coke bottles.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Thinking outside the box. That's the way. They're very. I've always found that people in those kinds of environments, they seem to be like just exceptional at being able to adapt and come up with things. I've watched a couple of shows there. I think it was Mining Iguana or somewhere like that. And they had this fella. He's repairing their diesel engine, and one of the seals went on the valve. And he's like pulling his shirt apart and taking the threads out of his shirt and wrapping it around the bolt there to make a seal, and then screws it back in and fires her up, no problems.
Wow.
You know? Who here would have thought to pull half their shirt apart to do it?
Well, yeah. I do know anyway, one true story that my uncle one time, his alternator belt on his car broke, and they were way out in the middle of nowhere. Huh?
Your auntie lost something that day, didn't she?
Yes, she did. He said, give me your pantyhose. And she said, what, are you crazy? He said, we got to get home.
Yeah, enough to keep the water pump going, and that's all you need, isn't it?
It worked.
Yeah.
It's a new pickup line near the bar. Hey, my alternator's broken.
Oh, man.
Anyway. That's enough from me. You guys keep talking. And Shannon, I've got to travel tomorrow in the day, but then I've got 2 days of R&R, so we've got to have that long conversation about this funny art project we're going to pull off.
Cool. All right, well, back to our letter. Does anybody remember where we were?
We're discussing with Thomas. We think we found his angle.
Yeah, we found Thomas's angle. Did Thomas go to sleep on us?
Oh, I'm still here. So many people talking. I was just, you know, keep my mouth shut so I'm not talking over top of anybody.
That's mighty honorable of you, brother.
Keep talking. I feel guilty.
Someone accused me of being lazy.
Oh, well, you know, hey, sometimes you got to be lazy in this world. You got to kick back. Got to put your bare feet in the grass and walk around and get grounded, that kind of thing, you know?
Yep.
Anyway, I think that maybe there may be such a case that we might have to have 2 letters go out, you know, one to the government people and one to we the people, you know? What do you think?
That sounds like a plan that will, I think that's something that a lot of people might have actually struggled with is because we want them to be constructive. And I know that sounds a bit off, but though, trying to be constructive to something you despise can be a very, very hard task. So maybe there's the opposing side. So I'll maybe set up a second link there on the website after the show, and we can have, for those who can write a constructive letter to the government, we will have that link, and we'll have another separate link for those who wish to write solutions to we the people, you know, come up with ideas of how, as Tom said, you know, to end the tyranny, because it's dead right, it is tyranny, we are. I read a story today, 91% of Australians disagree with the Great Barrier Reef being used as a dumping ground for waste products from coal mining. Which I would think 99% of the world would disagree with that, but 91% disagree. Yet it's still on the cards. It's still on the table.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but does that not prove that voting just does not matter?
Well, and that's why I'm thinking. That's why I'm thinking.
Guys, I thought I'd come through with a solution for you.
Go, Doctor.
I came across a guy a long time ago, maybe 1990, and he was saying that you should never let a unit of sort of like local government or real government exceed more than 5,000 people. Now, I've had many years to ponder this idea, and I would have to conclude that he's right. You know, 5,000 is the kind of mathematical number that you shouldn't really exceed, because as soon as you start exceeding that, then you start getting all this nonsense of big armies and big projects and, you know, all the rest that goes with it. So I think as part of the solution, we should aim towards a system where essentially we never exceed a group of 5,000 people coming together to decide what roads get built, what schools get built, you know, that kind of way. Because then we're, you know, things are going wrong. You know who to go and see. It's not like this invisible government and trying to ring up an 0800 number or something, you know. So I do think that guy who told me that in 1990 was in Germany, was on the right track. Well, I thought I'd give you that one.
I think he's right, because I've heard things such as certain states wanting to give the National Guard police powers, which you know, to me, is a dangerous precedence to set out there for the United States as far as that goes. But, you know, a huge government, to me, I agree with you. It's not a good idea. So if you could get it down to a more manageable number, so to speak, I mean, you know, if you listen to the conspiracy guys out there, they want to get we the people down to a more manageable number. So, yeah.
That's not that much of a conspiracy. I mean, you listen to them go on and drone on and on about overpopulation. Obviously, they've got some qualms with how many people there are. So,
yeah, and even Bill Gates, he was heard saying, you know, about, you know, if we do a good job with vaccination, we can decrease the population and us this and that. And I'm like, wait a second, ain't vaccination supposedly to cure people or help them? You know, not decrease the population. He's talking about birth control and vaccination, you know. I mean, come on, man. And then I know he's filthy, stinking rich, but doesn't he have children or something like that, you know?
Yeah. To anyone who wonders,
that's just that he's...
Sorry, Tom. Sorry. Go on, mate.
Well, I was just going to say, that's just the point. He is thinking about his kids. He wants to make sure everything is there for them and the heck with everybody else's kids.
Yeah.
To me, that's kind of selfish, you know.
To anyone who wonders if that actually goes on, look up Utopia in Northern Territory, Australia. And I'm just going to leave it at that. You do your own research and you come up with what you find.
I think somebody grabbed that idea you're talking about, cultists, and made a TV show in Britain about it. Because the TV show's the same name, Utopia, and it's all about population control.
Hey, really?
Oh, yeah.
I know exactly what goes on out there. My family actually came over here as they referred to back then, protectors of the Aborigines, which was basically the police to round them up. So I've got very deep roots into that, and I've done a heck of a lot of research, because I'm actually like, my great-great-grandfather was one of the, and you can look him up, he was William Thomas. He was actually one of the good blokes. He really, really tried to make a difference in the Aborigine community, but he was met time and time again by the people above him with things like, you know, his supplies wouldn't come through and things like that, because he was trying to make a good difference, and he tried not to allow the population control and all the rest of it. So, you know, he really got met with some nastiness. And you know, you can check out his diaries. They're up in the the Australian Museum up in Sydney. I've done a heck of a lot of research into it, and just look, the best example I can give, and it is a current example, is Utopia, Northern Territory, Australia.
Well, you know, as I'm listening,
I got to tell you about the population. I grew up in Australia, as most of you know. That's where Koolders is, and he's in a very low population area. We've got 20 million people, is it 22 million, in a place the size of the USA, okay? There's a street parade here earlier in the year with 12 million people. One parade.
Wow.
In the Philippines. One gathering. 12 million people. Can you just imagine that?
That's a lot.
It's incredible. Yeah, and I thought, holy crap, you know, I'm never going to worry about, you know, rush time in Pitt Street in Sydney or New York. That's 12 million. That's one street parade, and they're all barefoot, which is amazing. The other thing is, like, I'm living on some islands now. The Philippines, there's 96 million people here living on a few islands. That's where you see a crowded area. And I've got to tell you, though, it's not going to be sustainable. It's not sustainable. They're physically just about to run out of room. And it's not sustainable. So I don't know what the solution is. And I'm not coming up with any policy. But we just can't keep exploding the population. You know, people criticise the Chinese when they did the one-child policy, but when you've got 1.3 billion people and limited resources, what in the hell do you do? I really don't know. I'm not suggesting anything, but we've got to find some solution, because until you start living in these crowded environments, you realise, hell, they're just going to physically run out of room one day. All resources.
Well, yeah. You know...
I disagree there, Mark, because the problem you have in the world at the moment is you have a few small local areas with too many people, and part of the agenda from the New World Order is to ensure that those areas increased in population and decreased in resources. And technology shows that we can support a population 10 or 20 times bigger than we presently have. But it would require, in some cases, movement of people. Like, people in Bangladesh are, you know, too close to the water. I mean, they, you know, a bit of a storm and half the country gets flooded. Lots of people in the Philippines do leave the Philippines and go to other countries like America or Europe, where it's pretty empty. I mean, Europe is pretty empty. Yeah, if you go to Holland, it's crushed, but... You know, if you go to Germany, it's pretty empty these days. France is hopelessly empty. Here in Spain, where I am, it's really empty. I mean, you got large... Everybody lives on the beach and in Madrid, but everything in between is empty. So, no, it's just a problem of moving people around. And what we have... One of the problems we have is big governments, because... What's happening in America is all the Mexicans are coming up to the United States and they're getting social welfare handouts, where if we didn't have a system that was so elaborate and people just came along and worked and did their work, people could move around the world, you know, without any passports or anything. They just move with it as they need to. But ever since the First World War, we've had all these barriers to movements. And then we brought in these social welfare programs, and only certain citizens are entitled to this, and certain citizens are entitled to that. And big government grew up, and now they're trying to blow the whole system up by importing in 60 million Mexicans and take over the place, and, you know, all sorts of nonsense is going on. Same in Europe. They're bringing in half of Africa to blow up the social welfare system here. For the same reason, they want to drive down wages, and, you know, we'll all work for $1 a day in the plantations of the IMF or something. There's no problem with population, it's just how it's handled.
One of the things that strikes me as I'm listening to this particular conversation is that there's places out there, I think one of them's called Venice, where the streets are literally flooded, but there's houses that, you know, I can't remember exactly where it's at, but there's a place where they literally build houseboats, and there's a whole city that is literally on water, you know. So it's not like we don't have the technology or the land over here in the United States. They have literally closed down thousands and thousands of acres and called them natural reserves, you know. So I think...
Well,
go ahead.
Nixon did that in the 70s when he took the dollar off the gold standard. He had to come up with a way of backing up the dollar. So he made all 25% of America only for nature reserves. But that's not the real purpose. Nobody's allowed to live in them, so they can sell those as collateral to the Chinese, so that they can encourage the Chinese to buy the dollar. And they say, well, if the dollar goes belly up, you get this big natural park and this natural park. And so... something like 50% of America now is no longer allowed to go into it, and that land belongs to the people. So the government has stolen the land and collateralized it and given it away to all these foreign people, and they've done something similar in Europe, you know, and they're doing it every day in Europe. Same plan, UN Agenda 21. So you got to identify the enemy.
Well, it's not the first time in history a government has stolen land. I mean, look what happened to the Native Indians, and they wondered why, you know, the two different clashes of societies coming together, they wondered why there was, a lot of liquor and stuff going on on Indian reservations. You know, they got moved from point to point when they were promised things, they weren't given what they were promised, and, you know, these were all government entities that did that. I'm sure that the average Joe out there probably wasn't the one to say, hey, let's go over there and just take what they got and, you know, move them down the road a bit, you know?
No, but they supported it because of they accepted the propaganda. Well, they're just filthy heathens, man. We're doing this for their own good.
Yeah, well, they didn't
do no good.
Them out. Look what
you're
they did to the out. Aborigines, man. They're still doing to the Aborigines. Mm-hmm. They had
a
culture of their own.
Australia has the only case in recorded history of man of complete genocide of the Aborigines off of Tasmania. It is the only existing case where every single Aboriginal in Tasmania was exterminated or died. And Tasmania is not a small area. It's, you know, the size of some states in the US, and it's a case of genocide. And we have a day in Australia called Australia Day, where they celebrate the white man coming to Australia. The Aborigines call it the National Day of Mourning. We took their land, simple as that. And Coulters was, you know, I know who is a grandfather. Was it grandfather Coulters?
Great grandfather, mate. Oh,
great-grandfather.
Great-great-grandfather, actually.
I've read about him, and it's somewhere he rings a bell, but my father lived up near where
Bennett's.
You were. Yeah, my grandfather lived up near where you are now. They were world drillers and that, and just used to live and work with Aborigines using Aboriginal artists. And the stories my father told of the cruelty dished out the Aborigines was horrific. And what we're taught about Aborigines at school back in the 60s when I was a kid was totally wrong. I used to go, my father's living with them, they don't do that, this and that, and they're not this and this and that. We're taking their kids away from them, for God's sake, back then still. So there's been some horrific things, American Native Indian, and look at Australia. We took Australia away from the Aborigines, full stop.
Yeah.
And it's happening all over the place. But what I am concerned about, getting back to the original point, you just can't have unlimited population growth, not for political reasons. Forget the politics, the resources. go and have a look how much aluminium's in the ground and iron ore and resources. There is a finite amount of resources. Go and have a look at the oceans, what's happened to them and the natural, what's happened to the natural resources. I know technology can do this and that, but technology is only available to a very, very limited few. I was with people yesterday, they don't have electricity. When I say electricity, they don't have anything. They don't have anything, not even a flashlight. Okay, there's 1.6 billion people who don't have that. And they're all hooked on kerosene lamps, which cost them about a third of their wages.
And ruin their lungs.
Yeah, you've got to look at where the resources are going to come from. Not the land, where the resources are going to come from. I mean, the people I was with yesterday, if the fish aren't there, they go hungry, literally. Or if they don't scavenge from the forest or get a few handouts, we're up there and did a bit of food relief yesterday, they go hungry, full stop. And what I noticed yesterday was all the kids were slim, trim, fit. Today at this restaurant where all the rich kids go, all the kids were fat. They were all obese like American kids. I just thought, what a contrast. What a bloody contrast.
Yep.
So anyway, I'll get off my high horse. So my concern is the resources. Is the resources. It's not the land. It's not the government. Everything you said, I agree with. I'm not disagreeing with you. But I don't know how to do it. You know, you just can't. We've got, 7 billion people now. We can't sustain 15 billion people. And that's only a generation or two away.
Well, there's an easy way to control the population without hurting anybody, and that's education. Teach people, you know. Let them make choices based on education rather than, you know, propaganda and lack of information and, you know, just going about their day doing whatever. I mean, technology, I think, has probably been one of the biggest inhibitors of the growth of population you can think of. I mean, think about all the geeks that basically end up, you know, not getting married, or they don't get married until way late in life because they spent so much time.
What are you trying to say?
You know, exactly.
Jerry Wiesma, you're in the wrong place to go making that statement.
I feel like there are plenty out there. They're getting involved in that one. Or they looked at the economics of it and they said, whoa, I think one's enough. They're plenty too expensive. We can't have two. You know, maybe if I hit the lottery, we'll have a second one. You know, they're smart enough to actually think about that way. There's a movie called Idiocracy that actually kind of explores that, you know? So
I'll tell you what hinders us here, and that's a lot of snow being snowed in all winter.
I said,
we're going to have a baby boom again.
Well, I think that when humanity finally realizes what kind of state, you know, we're all in, and they start realizing that whenever you take, you need to give back at the same time. You know, if you take something away from nature, there's logging companies out there that people demonize all the time, but these same logging companies, when they go to cut down trees, will plant many more trees. And there's actually two reasons for that. One is to replenish the trees you're taking down, which, you know, you could say might take too many years or whatever to keep up with. But on the other hand, it's putting back something as you're taking it out. Some of those trees will grow pretty doggone fast. But you know, if you just continually take, then, you know, eventually, yeah, we would run out of resources. And there's a lot of companies out there that, as opposed to giving something away because, you know, the liability purposes or whatever, such as food or, you know, resources, they will throw it in a dump. So there's a whole lot of waste of things, resources that could be taken care of from the get-go that, you know, if the world is getting overpopulated, it would at least slow down the process enough to find a real solution to the problem, you know, as opposed to, you know, genocide or whatever. You know, I'm just a... you call me...
You said education.
Yeah.
You said it was education, because I tell you why, you're correct. I'll give you an example. In Australia, we can't replace our population if we're just left to breed normally. We have to import people. And most of Europe, a lot of countries, their actually populations are declining apart from the immigrants. And the immigrants are coming from uneducated countries where they do have, like here, we're doing this competition yesterday. How many kids you got? This one's got 12, this one's got 11, this one's got 8. I'm going, holy crap, I haven't heard those numbers for years. You know, I'm used to seeing 1, 2, or 3 at the most. And you are correct. The educated Western geek societies are actually decreasing in population. The only thing that's sustaining them or increasing them is immigration. So whoever said about education is 100% right. The other thing is the social security in many countries like this is to have a lot of kids, because you ain't got no, nothing to keep you alive later on apart from what your kids give you. But that leads me to my final little story in Spingbout Snowed in Sweden. And I went to a town called, I can't quite remember its name, it's right in the middle of northern Sweden. And what they used to do there, they had this big cliff, 400-foot cliff. And when you're no longer a useful member of your tribe, you'd go for a walk up the top of the cliff and you didn't come home. You went over the edge. And that was their social security system. I thought it was kind of cool 400 years ago.
Oops.
Hey, Dad, you go for a walk up the cliff. All right, I'll go, son.
you'll remember a few years ago there, Mark, where they were paying basically any person, and this includes young teenage girls, $5,000 to have a baby here in Australia.
They were, because they were.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's where my son comes from. That's where my son comes from. A young lady who decided not, you know, to tell me she was on a pill when she actually indeed was not. And here I've got a 10-year-old, 12. Hang on, what year is it? Holy Toledo, he's 14, he's 14 this year. Street. I'm a 14-year-old boy, mate. So, you know, and that was purely brought on by greed. She wanted money.
Wow. You know? Yeah, but it was government policy. Don't
exactly.
Blame
her. Oh, don't blame her. She only had a baby for money, dude. I can blame her.
Well, here's the question. Was it greed or was it survival, though? I mean, did she already have tons of money and she just wanted more because, you know, she just can't get enough? Or was she, you know, in a situation where,
people,
man, if she didn't have
people,
that, she
wouldn't be able to pay. People live on the dole here in Australia, mate, and our dole is quite generous compared to yours, okay?
It's
so
huge.
Yeah, okay? They're, like literally, they're getting, like, $400 a fortnight to live off. Okay, you guys get what? A bunch of food stamps and $75, right? Nah, right? She had more than enough to survive.
I think it depends on who you are and what you are. I mean, a woman with, you know, a child.
No, we're not talking about single parent. I'm talking about unemployment benefits. Not single parent. Not disability.
That's how much you made before you lost your job? Like, I've got a friend who.
No, these are people who never had a job, mate. These are people who, from the moment they're able to claim social security payments, do, and they stay on it for life, and they pop out freaking babies, so they get these bonuses and increase. Then they end up on what's known as a single parent pension, and they go from $400 a fortnight to $1,200 a fortnight with all their little extra bits they get, and they work out how to work the system and get this little extra bit here and this little extra bit there. You know, nah, mate. It's a game for monetary gain. That is all it is. Instead of going out, getting a job, and being a part of society. I know everyone just sort of stood back and went, what did you just say, Corey? No, right. We can all be a part of society. That's no drama, you know. It's the whole government thing. That's a whole separate thing. But going out and getting a job and being a constructive member of society, you know, there's no excuse not to do that, you know, for at least 90% of the people who are on our unemployment benefits, all right? And I'm not going to give a figure, but there is a lot of women in this country who are purely and simply get themselves knocked up so they can get the cash, dude. And that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's a
problem. They hardly even want the kids, mate.
They encourage.
They hardly even want the kids, mate. These are how kids get abused and locked in their bedroom in the car seat for, you know, 5 days until they die, right? Because they never wanted the kid in the first place. They don't love it. They just like the money. And now they're going to put up the screaming baby. You know, no. Not okay, mate. Not okay one bit. You know, so that... I will literally... Here, have $5,000. $5,000 is a lot of money when you're a, you know, 15-year-old girl.
That's the problem, though, with the whole, you know, giving people something as opposed to making them work for it. If you give them something and you keep giving it to them, at some point they become dependent on it, and then they can't survive without it, you know?
Well, we
if
sort
we were to
of
cut
have
out all Social Security, cut out all welfare, how many people would starve to death before they figured out what to do in order to basically make ends meet, you know?
We sort of had that discussion about our children and raising our children that, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that they're given just about everything they want. And so with that said, they don't never have to understand that, you know, money doesn't grow on trees and you can't always get what you want. And so those particular individuals, when they grow up, they're always expecting, you know, they're always expecting something. So,
right.
You know, it's going to be a case of, you know, this is not something that's happened overnight. It's going to be a case of, like you guys were saying earlier, education. You're going to have to educate your kids from the get-go. Shannon told a good story about one of her kids that was complaining about what she didn't have, and then whenever she brought her down to the bare essentials, what she needed, then it was a realization for that child to understand that, hey, you know, I didn't have it so bad. There's a lot of people out there that really do have it bad, and, you know, they don't have the luxuries of running water, and, you know, they have to go clear down to the well or a stream and try to get whatever they can to survive. So these average Joes out here that we're talking about that are sucked into the welfare system, if that system was to ever collapse, you know, you'd have a calamity of epic proportions because these individuals wouldn't be able to fend for themselves. You know, how many of them knew how to hunt or a garden or whatever? I think it all falls back to education.
Most of them don't even have the skills to discuss things with each other in order to basically keep from getting into fights over petty things either.
Yeah,
because their school system is not teaching them anything. And, you know, you're talking about this welfare thing. I really think basically the reason that so many, you know, of these extremely wealthy people were perfectly fine with putting the welfare system in place is because, for one simple fact, and this is going to be kind of shocking, but they're terrified of poor people. Why are they terrified? Because poor people have no overhead, and they are driven, extremely driven, to better their lives because they have nothing. So they will work really hard for much less than these rich people who have three cars in the garage and have, you know, gobs and gobs of expenses constantly going out, and they have to make $50 or $100 an hour just to make ends meet. So, you know, there's no way they could compete against somebody who could learn how to do a trade within a year or two and will do it for $10 an hour and still have, you know, $300 or $400 left over to go out and party every night, you know? They just can't do it. And, I mean, if those people are that driven, they're not going to party with that $300. Before long, they're going to have a business of their own that rich person's business cannot compete with, and they will overturn that business. So they give them just enough to keep them placated, keep them from working, keep them from, you know, fighting to take those jobs, and, you know, use a number of other little tactics to basically keep the minimum wage earners and the people who are just above minimum wage from ever being able to move forward. The regulations and whatnot, you know. You get all that out of the way, we'd have a completely different society. But if you yank all that out from underneath all these people, you know, they're standing on that rug.
Quick way to a population decrease.
One of the things
I'm saying, you have to slowly pull it out to let those people get off on their own so that they can continue, you know, existing as contributing members of society, you know.
One of the things that's a scary thought in my mind that I've been thinking about as we've been talking about these particular episodes, such as overpopulation, lack of resources, and so on and so forth, and yeah, maybe goes all the way back to the Georgia Guidestones where they talk about dropping the population to, I think, like 5 billion or something like that. But if I was at the top of the world and I was one of the global elite and I was having this same discussion and I had all the power and the resources that I needed and stuff like that, what would be going through my mind would be how to fix the future of humanity. And the scary thought in my mind is that these individuals will probably think that the ends would justify the means to do whatever it takes to bring the population down to a more manageable deal, such as, you know, hey, we go over there and get in a war, we can lose about 5,000 over here, we can lose 5,000 over there, you know, we can stop shipping medicines in over here or whatever, or we can tank the vaccinations to where it makes them sterile or whatever. But do you see the scary portion of what it is that that I'm talking about, that these individuals at the top would literally believe that they could, you know, they could solve the problem just
and
by...
Actually, I think the scary part is it's not that they believe. It's not that they believe anything. It's that that position attracts people who have no empathy.
Yeah.
They are broken machines that have not fully matured into a human being because they don't have the ability to empathize with other people. They don't have the ability to feel certain emotions that make it possible to empathize. And so essentially, you know, they're not much more than basically a lizard living inside human flesh.
On the
it's
movie
called a psychopath.
On the movie The Titanic, one thing that it's the biggest the thing that I remember from the movie The Titanic was that most of the average Joe out there were all the it was men. Men are going to stay behind and they're going to put the women on the boats and the children on the boats first, and then they're going to take care of all that. And then you see this one rich guy who somehow or another wiggles his way into the boat and gets off the boat. You know, that to me. Is exactly what I was talking about at the top. You know, the ends justify the means. I'm rich, so I need to get out there or whatever. You know, it's just I don't see how unless, like you said, Thomas, where they haven't grown as a human being, I don't see how anybody out there could do that.
Well, how can you learn to empathize with other people if you're not around them either? I mean, There's a problem right there that they're facing that they can't really do anything about either, is that you're born into one of these rich families. From the time you're born until, you know, you're able to basically fend for yourself, your family is terrified of you being, you know, used against them, like, you know, kidnapped and maybe, you know, held for ransom or whatever. So they separate you and isolate you from anyone that might possibly be harmful, and as a result, all the things that you could be learning from being in contact with those people, developing, you know, emotionally and mentally, never happens. I mean, we have proof that if you separate a baby from certain stimulus, that they will not develop the organs necessary to use that stimulus. Like, you know, they take baby chimps and they hide them from the sun, so they can't have any light at all for like the first 6 months of their life. They bring them out and they're totally blind. The nerve endings never grew from their retina to their brain. They just don't happen.
And even worse, if you take that same chimp immediately after it's born, and the same thing happens with a human baby, and give it no stimulus from ape contact or human contact in the baby's case, that it will actually die very, very quickly.
Well, I'm going to say something that might sound a bit controversial, but from everything that I've listened to for all the times that we've been broadcasting, the most brilliant minds are at the bottom. You know, the folks up at the top, maybe they've got a college education, or maybe they've had, private tutoring and all this kind of stuff. But for them to even contemplate on, you know, whoever put the Georgia Guidestones up there, to even say that we need to drop the population down to this deal right here, they have no grasp on what it is to actually be human. I mean, we're sitting down here, we're talking about, we don't want to lose anybody. We want to try to save everybody and feed everybody and do whatever we can. And we're finding constructive solutions to it. Where on the other hand, you know, at the top, their mindset's just totally opposite. Is that crazy?
That's because they've gotten into a position they don't have to work to stay in that position very hard, so basically they don't develop any abilities. It's the same problem we have with NASA. When we first founded NASA, we had the brightest and the best in there. So, I mean, what happened? We ended up on the moon. But as these people that are in there became, I don't know, what do you call that, they became career individuals with NASA. Their you know, job was secure. They didn't have to really work that hard to keep their job. The capabilities started going away. You know, you don't exercise something, it goes away. So if you don't exercise your mind and your intellect, it's going to dull down. And so, you know, we ended up with it diminishing down until we hit the NASA shuttle thing. And now, I mean, what do we got now as a result of all this? You know?
Well,
if they were really that bright, they would have fought to find a way to basically keep going.
Yeah.
But as a result, we have nothing, because nobody has the intellect to deal with the politicians that said no more money.
I've talked to a few politicians personally, and I don't know if you guys ever experienced this before, and maybe it sounds a little bit big-headed of me or something like that, but it's not intended that way. I found myself that sometimes when I go out there to talk to the average Joe, I have to take and dumb my sentences down, maybe even extend them a little bit to get my point across to where they actually can understand what it is that I'm trying to communicate with them. I've talked to a few politicians who were pretty much on that same level. It was almost painful to talk to these individuals because While they knew facts of polls and different things, different studies or whatever, you know, they could sit there and quote off to you how many scientists believed in global warming and this and that and all that kind of jazz. And when you sit down there and try to explain to them the basic science, you see their eyes kind of roll back in their heads and they just kind of disappear from the reality that you're sitting there talking to them. You know, it's mind-boggling because some of these folks believe themselves to be so incredibly intelligent, but there's no common sense there. It's kind of like that phrase where you can be book smart but stupid at the same time. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, just because you've got a degree does not mean you've got common sense now, does it?
No. And that's scary that we...
Especially since you can buy a degree most of the time if you have enough money.
We elect some guys or gals to office because, you know, they dress well, they look good. I mean, they look like what we would want to have represent us and stuff like that. But maybe, you know, somebody had mentioned one time about giving them all a litmus test or whatever to see if they even knew the Constitution before we put them up there in office. See, there's where the responsibility on our back lays is to actually do the research to find out what these guys are stand for before we ever even ship them up there. You know what I mean? So, you know, we got our work cut out for us, and I think that this most profound letter of peace, although it may sound like a pipe dream or something small, is a good stepping stone towards trying to, you know, bring some common sense and lift it up so that they can stand on that common sense when they make a decision. You know, I may be wrong, but hey, it's all we got at this point because we're not the ones in office. We're not the ones, you know, that actually have our vote. You know, you go up there and you got Democrats versus Republicans, and I think it was George Washington that said that the multiple party systems would basically crash the whole dream to begin with. And you know, what do you do, man? You got to get the money out of politics. You got to get the common sense into the average Joe. You got to make people understand the value of the human life. And until we can get that ball rolling, you know, such as something simple like writing a letter, then, you know, we're going to continue down this path. We're going to continue to have fights over resources and fights over land and disputes, you know, and people just feeling like, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. It's all what I can get, not what I can give. And somehow or another, we got to get them into what they can give. And so that's why when I was talking about posing my letter of the most profound letter of peace, I struggled for a whole week trying to figure out what to say. What could I say that doesn't sound accusatory? What could I say that would grasp their attention? And the only way that I could say it would be to pose the question on myself before them so that they could hear me ask myself the question, you know, what have I done for my family? What kind of legacy would I leave for the children? What kind of, you know, how have I served my community? How have I served the world? How have I served my God according to my own spiritual beliefs or whatever, you know? And, you know, to lay that burden on myself while at the time I'm asking these questions of myself to them to open their mind, I learned a little bit myself. What do you think? Man, we just got totally...
What, is it just you and I in here?
Yeah, something's happened then.
And maybe I was too profound.
Dump it down? What?
Yeah.
What?
Don't blame me, I'm running social media.
I'm not saying I'm smarter than everybody out there, but I do feel like sometimes when I'm talking to individuals that's come through the public school system, or even college for that matter, that I got to dumb myself down in order to communicate to them, because they've already been taught certain things. They heard it. Okay, I heard it on TV. It must be true. The polar bears are going to drown. The world's going to burn up. And so, I go out there and I spew that out to all my friends who, they know I'm a nice guy. And so they're going to believe me, over the next guy. Because why would I lie to them, I heard this on TV, it must be real. But that's the mindset that you got going on out there. When you talk to them about a politician, I go out there and I listen to, all these people talking about George Bush did this, George Bush did that, Obama did this, Obama did that. We all know, anybody with common sense knows that these guys are, on the end of a string from some puppet master who has a lot of funds in the bank. Otherwise, they never would have got elected. Because when's the last time you ever heard of a man of my financial stature being elected as president of the United States? It just doesn't happen. You got to have a lot of money just to get signed on the list. And then you got to have all these background checks and everything like that. When all these guys are up there, if they're committing crimes that you and I would be buried so far underneath the doggone dirt, we'd be off the planet,
Yeah.
So, what do you do?
Well, that's why I said, passive, peaceful, but very decisive resistance. I mean, you understand, I'm sure everybody here has heard the term civil disobedience. So that's, exactly what I was suggesting with the tax thing. Don't pay your taxes,
Well,
pay basically as little as possible. If some man's taking the money out of your paycheck before you get it, then when you fill that paperwork out, have him take as little as possible out of that. But, like I said, don't put yourself into a position where if they do come a knocking, you've got $5,000 that you owe them and you don't have any money to pay them. No, put that money in the bank account, or wherever. I mean, invest it in the short-term investment to give you some extra money.
To some extent,
what I wanted to say to you was it's the same in Ireland where we are, that we say the government hasn't got the right to tax us. The government has only got the authority to tax a corporation. It has no right to tax a self-employed person or a normal Joseph earning a living. Because the simplest way to look at it is, if 100% taxation is slavery, at what percent is it not slavery? And it's pretty obvious that any percent, even 1%, is slavery. So what we do is, when they make demands and taxes on us, we say, document and verify the obligation. And of course they can't verify or document the obligation, so they usually come back with threats. But we're getting more and more people to stop feeding the beast.
That's just it. Hold on. You just nailed it right there. They usually come back with threats. Because ultimately, everything they do is at the end of a smoking gun. You have to look at anything someone proposes. Look for the gun. Where's the gun at? Who, is there a gun involved in it, and is it pointed at you, or is it purely voluntarily that you're asked to participate in something? And if you choose not to, the only negative impact will be that you won't get to participate in whatever it is they're proposing to do.
Well, this is it. We say that we because basically all the ex-British colonies more or less are the same. So Africa, Ireland, America, Canada, they all basically do have an opt-out of taxing. But when you opt out of tax, you don't get the benefits. So it's a double-edged sword. You can opt out of tax, but then you can't go down looking for your unemployment benefit or, your pensions or any of that lark. But what we're saying is, the price you pay for these things is you're feeding the beast, and the beast gets bigger. And it's never going to give you a pension anyway. By the time you come around to pension age, it'll all be gone. So no point. I don't have any part of the weapon.
To be quite honest, I think the pension will be there, but I think that this is the problem that no one's paying attention to. The pension that you go to collect will have to be paid for by your grandchildren. Your children are paying for your parents' pension that's getting there now. That's the problem, is they keep passing the buck on it, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So sure, you might get your pension, but sooner or later, this whole system is going to collapse.
Well, I don't think we got too long left. I would say that we're in the death throes of seeing the dollar is about to go bang, the English sterling is about to go bang, the Japanese yen will go bang very shortly.
The sooner it does, the less painful it's going to be. The longer we have to wait, the worse it's going to be when the time comes to pay the piper, you know.
Well, and surprisingly enough, I have to agree with you, Thomas, because the kids that's growing up these days that are used to give me, give me, give me, they're going to have a rude awakening if the whole system does collapse. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the only thing is we've got very lucky since, because now we got new machines like printers that can print parts in plastic. We got machines that can print parts in metal. I think it'll be much more easy to go back to a local economy. When you want spare parts, they print up the parts for your car, and so we won't need these giant
That technology is not widely distributed enough that's effective in the way you're talking. The technology that's widely distributed is very weak, like the riprap. I mean, it's making plastic parts, making very weak plastic parts. But SLS technology that actually prints with solid metal material, you have to have $500,000 just to buy one of those machines, and then you have to follow all their guidelines and whatnot, or you don't get to use it. And we need that kind of technology widely distributed.
It's rapidly dropping in price. I mean, I've seen a metal one now, which is open source one, which you build yourself using a TIG welder. And it's only something like $5,000. So we are going to see your local parts shop where you walk down within the next few years, and you want to spare a part for your car, and it'll be rattled up by these machines.
All right.
I believe what you guys are talking about is another reason why I feel like virtual labs and what we're doing here on the Knights of the Round Table is a very important deal. You know, in the alternative energy community, everybody's searching for, you know, clean energy, green energy, whatever you want to call it. I'm hoping that this one particular video that we were talking about earlier about the permanent magnet motor, you know, I'm hoping that it's a real deal. You know, like I said, I got to keep a skeptical eye, but I got to keep an open mind at the same time. But the thing that worries me the most is what was mentioned earlier about, you know, this thing getting suppressed if it was real. And so this is where, you know, once again, we're back to education and sharing of information. We got to get it out to the public as fast as humanly possible. Just like I feel like this letter, throwing a positive pebble out there in the pond, just as fast as humanly possible, because, you know, We got a lot. Our backs are against the wall. It's either do or die, you know, if the economy does collapse. We got a lot of individuals out there who ain't even remotely prepared for survival. And it's going to be, to me, total chaos if indeed something like that does occur. That's the most scary thought of my mind, is that I've got family who live down in the city, and the robbing, the raping, the looting, and the pillaging that people would do in worst-case scenarios. I've even heard it said on one of them doomsday prepper shows. There was one particular group of individuals that said they're not going to prep for anything, that they're just going to wait till it all happens and go out and steal it from the people. So I think that what we're doing is really important, you know? Maybe it sounds like a pipe dream that we keep on pressing on like we do here on the Knights, and trying to put positive solutions and ideas out there, and writing these letters, and doing the alternative energy research, and what Mark Dancy does, going out there and testing these things to find out whether they're fact or fiction. I mean, these are valuable things that we need to be doing. I feel like we should be so much further advanced with what we're talking about. We're talking about 3D printers. We're talking about all kinds of amazing technology, and some of it's technology that's been around for years and years, and it should be already out there on the market. There shouldn't be anybody anywhere in the world that doesn't have electricity and heat and food. And, you know, that's just me, you know. Maybe I'm a dreamer.
One of the biggest things that holds back all of that is regulations, so that the corporations that are doing things the way they do don't get interrupted. They can keep doing what they're doing without any competition, more than anything.
Speaking of which, I've got to go to bed, fellas.
No, all right.
I just want to make a point you made about testing. I've been talking to this Pakistani guy live, and... quote, he doesn't want me to test his device live. he put this challenge out to the engineers and the scientists of the world, but this is how he wants me to test it. You test the device with your computer sensor, scan technology, and your CAD. So I've got to test it by watching, by video, remotely.
No wonder why.
No instrumentation connected.
Oh,
no wonder
man.
Why he wants to do it, yeah. Not you, eh?
So is he going to give you full...
I thought I'd update you on what I thought about how to get a hydrogen engine to work while we're here. And then you can chew over the idea.
Well, hold on for a second. Before you go into that real quick, I wanted to finish out what I was asking Mark. Is this guy going to give you schematics and measurements of how he built the thing in order for you to test it with your CAD program?
No, it's a scam. I'm calling it a scam now. Totally. They shot a video, and I can tell you 20 ways you could have faked that video. Unfortunately, I'm under NDA. 90% of the stuff I test, you never see about it. But I've seen just about every trick pulled in every book that you can imagine. And this one, I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, I come up with 20 ways I could have faked it. So he's put a challenge out to the engineers and the scientists of the world, but nobody's allowed to hook up any instrumentation to it.
Well,
they've got to test it by watching the video. You know what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I think of that.
That don't fly with the virtual labs crew.
But just when I said I was going to get some sleep, I really have to hear about this hydrogen thing, because that's one of my little pet projects. So I really want to hear this hydrogen thing.
Go ahead, Dublin.
Dream on it.
How about Dublin?
Okay, well, it goes back to actually the pump motor. In the pump motor, when you get the explosion, the steam explosion that drives the water out, the water goes back in. So it's a bit like a piston going backwards and forwards. But when the water goes back in, it doesn't require energy for the water to go back in. It's sucked back in. So one part of the cycle is free, if you know what I mean. Well, it's the same thing with a hydrogen engine. If you forget about the petrol side of the engine, where we're going wrong when we use hydrogen, I think, is we're not analyzing using the engine the way it should be used. When we do a hydrogen explosion, we can use a higher compression so we can get more power, so we can use less hydrogen. But when the piston goes to the bottom, and it's going towards the bottom, the last 10%, it's actually fighting the engine, because blowback has meant that there's less air in the cylinder than was originally there when you had the compression. So at that point, you actually really need to have a second explosion of hydrogen, put this a bit further with a bit more aim. I think that's what Meyer was doing. He was not just having one explosion at the top center. He was having a secondary explosion further down. And some of the new diesel engines, they've been having 5 explosions at a time. As the piston goes down, they're exploding. They're injecting 5 times the fuel in, and they're exploding. So I think that's what Meyer was doing, was he was having multiple explosions on the way down by injecting. Now, when the piston's coming back up, it's hydrogen and it's just water. It's steam. So there's no requirement to exhaust it. So you keep the valve shut, and then what happens is you get a suction pulling the piston up. So a combination of all these things, I think, can make a hydrogen engine possible. So I thought I'd throw that out to you guys, see what you thought.
The most efficient engine ever built was a hydrogen engine. It was a piston, floating piston. They went from one end of the tube, imagine a tube with a piston and a magnet in the middle of it. It used to go from one end, hydrogen injection, bang, then to the other end, bang. There's no crank, there's no nothing. What they did to extract the energy, they had a coil wrapped around it. So it's just induction. It was just straight magnet going to and fro. And they didn't have any valves or anything, basically. Yeah, well, they did. They had to inlet the hydrogen. But that was the most efficient. They got up to 53%, which is pretty damn good for an engine. Some of the points you make are valid, but I don't think it's enough to get you over the line, from my experience. When they do multiple injections with diesel, they do two things. They actually do multiple injections. Well, that's why you get multiple explosions. With hydrogen, it's got a flame speed of 8,000 feet per second versus your normal fuels, you know, 1,000 to 2,000. It goes bang incredibly bloody quickly. And that's one of the problems with hydrogen, actually. I think it's a good idea. Some of the points you made is good, but I don't think it's enough. Now, Stan never really got his working as he claimed, and that's another night for another discussion. But because I know a few people were busted in firsthand. But the thing is that you raise some points up, and I think you will increase the efficiency if you engineer those points you raise, but don't think it's enough to get over the line. That's just my
That's why I wanted to throw it out there. And this flame front, the very rapid flame front of hydrogen, is exactly where the problem lies. Because if you have a high compression and you explode the fuel in the piston at the top dead center, after a couple of as the piston's going down, it's losing power. But unlike other fuels, you don't need a high compression, and you could inject more hydrogen and oxygen and then have another explosion. And combined with water vapor in the piston, you're getting a steam engine effect, because steam expands at 1,800 times or something. But equally so, when the steam cools down, it'll have a sucking effect. So you've got to keep exploding the hydrogen several times on the way down, and then when it's reached the bottom, let it start coming up, and don't exit the exhaust. Let it suck the piston up. So I think we can increase the efficiency, but I don't know by how much. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Oh, it's a good idea. I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm just passing on my experience, that's all. Anyway, I've got to go to bed, great. Fellas. Thanks. Catch you later, okay?
Okay, great stuff. Thanks, guys.
Oh,
see you, fellas. I've got to go. Cheers.
Thanks all for right, joining us, Mark. Come.
Talk to you again soon.
All righty, folks. Well, looks like we're going to take a break and play a few tunes. And
Marty Allen left.
Oh. Whee! All right. Enough
I'm still
that.
Here.
All right, folks.
Where did get there?
State?
I'm not entirely sure where Shazis has got to, actually, Dublin. It's just you and I. So
I had my mic muted, and I'm sitting here talking about how we're getting ready to play a few tunes and take a break, and I guess I said it all for nothing.
You most certainly did, sir.
All right, then, folks. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table and the Dames of the Round Table, and we'll be back right shortly, so stay tuned. Peace and love. Hope you enjoy the tunes.
In constant sorrow all through his days, I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble.
treasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. You can bury me in Sunbeam Valley. For many years where I may lay. Sleeping in my grave, while he is sleeping in his grave. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no on God's golden shore. He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Strangest dream. teens. Is it you see? So I closed my eyes, saw her face. I'm a smile like a warm embrace. She had brown skin and bright blue eyes. That's when I realized I'm a pool, I'm a pool, I'm a pool of moon.
Guys, this is Boston native Spiritual Rez in the studio.
We'll be singing when we're winning. We'll be singing. I get knocked down, the back it up again. Could you ever gonna beat me down? I get knocked down, the back it up again. Could you ever gonna beat me down? I get knocked down, the back it up again. Could you ever gonna beat me down? I get knocked down, the back it up again. Could you ever gonna beat me down?
This in the night.
roundtable.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights and the Dames of the Round Table here. You know, old King Shaziz the Terrible has a huge heart, and I'm not naive enough. What are you doing over there?
You. You the dames.
Yeah. Just choked up my coffee.
Oh, dame. We only got one dame. Some other dames get in here, doggone it.
Yeah, there's not enough dames to go around. I'm not sure.
Well, that's cool. My dame wouldn't appreciate it anyway. Anyway, like I was saying before I was laughed into whatever dimension I'm sitting in now. I said I'm
on helium dimension.
Yeah, that's it. I'm on what? Hey! All right, look. Hey, I'm King Shaziz the Terrible, and I'm ruling with an iron fist, by golly. Hey, that was a dirty word out of the old book, wasn't it, by golly? Anyway, like I said, you know, I got a huge heart, but I'm not naive enough to believe that, you know, a life can only be nothing but, you know, flowers and candy and everything's sweet and everybody's good for each other, but because you're always going to have disputes. But one thing stands clear, we got to find some sort of resolution, and we got to find it quick, because on the path that we are on, as society, as humanity, as a world family or whatever, we are literally on a path to sure destruction. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, you know. It will end up in some mass calamity such as World War III, or even worse for that matter, you know, if you can visualize anything getting worse than World War III. But the fact of the matter is, we're the founding fathers, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers, aunts, uncles, and so on down the line of our children, our children's children's future. And so with that said, once again, with what we do today, we'll define the world that they live in tomorrow. We've talked about the most profound letter of peace to the world, and hopefully it's one of those stepping stones. Hopefully it's one of the positive ripples that we can actually send out there. And I'm serious about, I physically want to send these to every single politician that's on the books, because I believe that, you know, an encouraging word or a word of common sense is better than nothing said at all. Does anybody here at the round table disagree with that?
100%. Like Bambi's mother used to say, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
Well, we've talked about, you know, both sides of the story. You know, my buddy Thomas over there, he's a little bit upset at the system. He's so poisoned by the system, he can't think of what nice to say. So the only thing he could think about is, you know, in order to try to be... try to be nice about the whole deal is to write a letter to the people as opposed to the people in government, so that he can tell the people out there that, you know, hey, if your letter of peace and hope doesn't work, then these are the other options you have available. You know, those are solutions in both directions. So neither Thomas is wrong, nor are we wrong, you know, for wanting to write the most profound letter of peace and the most profound letter to the people of, hey, you know, wake up and smell the roses, so to speak, you know. Was that a rant?
only a little. It was only a little Shaziz, that one. It's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, we're good then. Somebody else take the floor then, because I don't want to steal anybody's valuable time.
Well, Jonathan's just joined us. I'd like his take on it.
How you doing, Jonathan?
Absolutely.
Hi.
So, what do you? You know, we know you just woke up, but we don't need to hear about all that. You got your coffee in hand, or your soda, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What do you think? Which side of the fence are you on? Are you on Thomas's side of the fence to write a letter to the people? Or are you on the rest of the side of the fence to write a letter to all the politicians, the most profound letter of peace?
Why not do both?
Well, I agree.
Yeah.
When I said on sides of the fence, Thomas is still on our side of the fence, but he's just a little bit aggravated, and I can understand his frustration.
He's hanging on the fence, shaking back and forth, going,
ah! Yeah. He's like, they're not going to listen. They're not going to listen. And we're going to say, we're going to at least try. And then he's going to send a letter out and say, look, if they don't listen, then this is what we got options. And I agree. It needs to be done. Yeah. It needs to be done on both sides. So, with that said, Jonathan, now how do you feel about it?
I'd say the politicians. No. The people. We have more power.
Yeah.
Well, we got to balance this out. It's like the scales of justice, you know? Mm-hmm. If I come in a room and I throw one of my boots off, at least only half of the room stinks, right?
This is one time where physics might need to be paid attention to.
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan, you're a younger guy, I'm assuming, right?
Yes.
We don't have to tell your age, but you know, what are your thoughts? What is your age group's thoughts about, you know, how this world is right now?
Well, if all of my age group thought like me, we could probably have a legitimate opinion.
Ah.
Does it actually care, one way or another?
Right. And why is that? Why don't they care? Why do you think they don't care?
Wait for high school women.
I think that one of the things that Jonathan kind of missed there on the deal, and I believe is really going on out there, is the average teenager out there is kind of caught in between the middle there. They see all the stuff going on in the world. They don't know whether or not they can even make a difference between the lies and the propaganda. It's kind of like who's right, who's wrong kind of thing. And then that with the actual distractions of being a teenager, such as, you know, love and the actual social life of a teenager, things can get really seriously complicated. So the last thing that they're actually thinking about at the moment is how to bring about world peace, when, you know, in reality, that's what they'd like to have. Am I wrong?
We're going to get my daughter set up so that she can get on here also, because Cultus and I have talked to her, and she does have some good things to say. And I know she's the same age as Jonathan is, so,
yeah.
I mean,
certainly in the same age bracket.
Well, I know, yeah. Jonathan's a thinker, and I know that there's things, yeah, in his mind that he would like to say, but, you know, the question is whether or not he believes it could actually be heard. And that's the deal. These kids want to be heard. And you know, just all the children of the world, they want to be heard. They want to be part of what we've got going on as adults. Am I wrong, Jonathan?
Kind of, but not really.
Okay.
I didn't really care. I was going to tell you what I thought, regardless of whether you're listening or not. But, you know, yeah, most people my age just, you know, want to be paid attention to.
Exactly.
So what was you going to tell? Let's hear it. What would you say if you could stand before all politicians? And remember to keep it PG-13, because we might have children listening.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you really want me to say what I would say?
Yeah, I want to know what your thoughts on the matter is. What would you tell the government if you had an opportunity to speak to them?
I'm not sure that I would be best for that. I would probably shy up.
Well, have a go, bro. Have a go.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know,
we're just friends.
Just as long as you don't swear, because I'm poised to drop your call.
Well,
there's got to be something that you agree or disagree with what's going on in this world today.
Well, mostly I disagree with all of it, because I think that it's part of the what's that? What's it called?
That's strike one.
My mic is really sensitive, okay? I don't know what to
say. All right, so Jonathan can take 3 deep breaths, and we'll come back in 5 minutes after he learns to control his vocabulary.
That's the sensitivity of your mic. It's the words that came through it.
Hey, Jonathan, you always have the option. You can type it down here in the chat room in Skype, and we'll read it out for you if you're too nervous.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because I find that I'm actually a lot better at constructing words in text. I can talk well, and I can project what I'm saying quite well. But when I put things into text, it comes out a heck of a lot more profound than it does when I'm being verbal. So, and most of you know that. So, you know, have a bit of a tap out on the keyboard there, Jonathan, and I'll read it out for you.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, with that said, you know, we've covered a lot of ground. We've talked about a lot of issues, you know, ranging from alternative energy ideas and the solutions by which we can actually throw the positive pebbles out there in the pond. You know, I keep saying this, and in the back of my mind, my mind tells me that, you know, nobody's going to listen. You know, it's all for naught. But then my heart tells me that it's not all for naught, because if we don't say, you know, it's like the stupid question thing. You know, the only stupid question is the one never asked. And so,
yeah,
if we don't,
yeah, I was gonna say, basically, it might be all for naught if you say something, but it's definitely gonna be all for naught if you do nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, with that said, there, we got options here. We got options. We can either all walk away from our keyboards and our computers and just say the heck with it, throw our hands up in the air and say, you know, there's nothing we can do to fix it. And then in that sense, we just cheated our entire children's future out the window, because we said nothing. We did nothing, you know.
Yeah, we stood by and we let it happen, and that's pretty much as bad as actually doing the action in the first place, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
I cannot stand around and hold that sign. I have to be one to write a letter, and I'm going to. As soon as these words that come to my heart are going to flow out, then it's going to work, and I hope that everybody does the same. It may take you longer than others. And Thomas, I do not disagree with you at all about that. Yes, I'm angry at times about what's going on, but, you know, in just because of who I am, I need to do it in a way that comes out lovingly, so that hopefully in some way, is at least what I believe, that it will touch a person's heart. You never know where they're at in their life. And, you know, some may ignore it. Some may down it, but it, even if it just is one to two people, that, I mean, to me, that's worth it.
And if we all get through to one person each, then all right, we got
one. Man.
That one potential person's heart that gets touched could very well be that one person that has their finger on the button, if you know what I mean. So, with that said, you know, doing nothing is not an option. Doing something is better than nothing. And so we start off with our letter, and we tell our friends on Facebook, hey, write a letter of what you would say to the politicians. Explain to them what it is that we're talking about. Not a letter of, you know, you did this, you did that, you dirty, rotten, no good for nothing, and should be run out of town on a rail or hung by a noose on the neck, because that's not gonna accomplish anything. You know, going out there and rioting in your town and bashing in the storefronts and burning down the buildings, that never accomplished anything. All that did was basically cheat your community out of a chance to grow into a fruitful community with jobs and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, standing on the side of the road and just showing your presence and protesting with a nifty little sign or whatever, you know the mainstream media is not going to give you any coverage, and your signs, chances are not going to get seen by the intended party. But with a letter, there's a physical entity, whether it be via email or a physical letter itself mailed to the person that you're intending on getting it to. Now, their staff's going to read this. You know, maybe they personally won't read it, but their staff's going to read it. And if a billion of these letters show up in their office, they're going to take note. There's a billion people out there who have said something that they want to be heard. We might just want to listen to them. Does anybody disagree with that idea?
Not long there.
No.
So,
not at all.
We got...
Sorry. I'm just going to correct up Jonathan's spelling here, and then I'll read this out.
You know what? I was typing fast.
Relax, dude. We've got all night. Well, it'll make it a lot easier for me to read if you take your time.
I'm not only bad at math, I'm bad at spelling too. So
yeah, I suck. Welcome to
I'm bad at
Welcome to my world of Google autocorrect, hey? I'm actually not the world's greatest speller like everyone probably assumes. I'm really, really quick at typing stuff into Google and double-checking my spelling.
Yeah, I think we all got a touch of that. But, you know, while you're getting that worked out, I just think that what we've got going on here, and I keep on reiterating this, and I know it, I sound like a broken record. I believe what the Knights of the Round Table and the Dame of the Round Table, we need more dames, so I can say dames instead of dame, because I say knights. All right, but either way, there's my English correction. But either way, I believe in what we're doing. I believe in Awake Radio, No Border Radio, We Roar, and Shaziz Radio. I believe in all the networks that are actually stepping forward and putting their necks on the line and saying what it is that's on their mind. Because, you know, while I might not necessarily agree with some of the networks out there and some of their ideas as how to solve this problem, I'm at least seeing action towards making something happen. You know, towards making a difference in the world. And so, you know, with that said, we've got to keep this ball rolling. We've got to talk to the youth out there. We've got to get kids like Jonathan to write down what it is that they would say if they had the opportunity to be heard. The children, we need them to write down and say if they had the opportunity to be heard what they would say. Because you do have the power of the spoken word. You do have the power of your actions. But there's a phrase out there that's nothing's mightier than the pen, because the pen, you just immortalize this down, your thoughts down in ink that can travel through the histories of time. And the future generations that read these letters that say, look, these were the founding fathers and the mothers and sisters of our generation. Look what they accomplished. The world was in chaos, and they at least tried to make a difference, and they put it in word, you know? Mm-hmm. What can
Luther
I say?
King's speech.
Huh?
Well, Martin Luther King's speech. That's immortalized in just about every textbook you can find.
Yeah.
And dealing with remotely subject.
Those were profound words, and those were words that will resonate throughout history, and I'm hoping that the Knights and the Dame of a Round Table can actually do the same thing. You know, we said this yesterday, it's not about getting attention for ourselves, it's not about financial gain, it's not about anything other than the fact that when we look into the eyes of our children, we want to be able to visualize a future for those children that is a wonderful life, you know, a life that doesn't have to necessarily go down the rough path that we were on, the stresses of wondering, you know, when the next false flag or the next doomsday scenario was coming on, wondering when our next paycheck was going to be there or whatever, you know, whether or not we'd even have a job. What we should do is realize that our lifespans, as far as humans go, is short. And so what we do with that lifespan is a really important thing. You know, the impressions that we leave on others from the time that we meet them till the time that we let them depart to the next world or whatever, is that I want it to be a positive response. I want my first and my last word to all my friends to be a message of peace, hope, and love, because that's the type of world that I visualize for my children. I don't want to see my children in a post-apocalyptic world, some sort of road warrior scene to where everybody's killing each other for whatever they can get their hands on. That's not the world that I want my children to grow up in. And if I'm standing here at this point in time and I can put something in the path of that to ship that destruction off to a different direction away from my family and my future, my children, all that, and your children, then so be it. I'm going to do what I can do, you know? That's all I got.
Yeah. That's all you need.
I can't wait to take this to my son's school. And, you know, and I may not even necessarily, because, you know, they're probably only going to have so much time to do this, but I'm not sure that I'm going to tell them anything about what's going on besides the fact that, what do you feel? You know, so that we don't have, you know, so they don't hear my side of it. I just want to know what they feel.
Yeah, that's the best way to go about it. You know, and it's like these polls out there. People take all these polls out there, and in the mainstream media, they live by these polls. Politicians live by these polls. But if you actually really think about how many people actually got in and voted on these polls, it's such a small minority of individuals who are literally saying this is what the American people want. That's not necessarily what the American people want. If you was to ask every single average Joe that same question, I bet them numbers would be way off the scale as opposed to what they are now.
Well, you have to realize, too, they manipulate those polls and whatnot all the time. Like, they did this big thing about, you know, how many people are unemployed, what's the percent of the people unemployed, but then they completely removed all the people who said, you know what, it's just not worth it to be in the marketplace anymore. And left the marketplace. They're not employed, but, you know, they're not reporting themselves as, hey, I'm unemployed, give me a job. You know, they're not down there at the unemployment office trying to basically find a job. So they didn't have any way to basically count those people, and they're not interested in counting them. They don't want to know that they're there. They also don't want to count the people who basically just got dumped off of a job where they were making $40,000 a year and are now working part-time at McDonald's, you know, to make ends meet. As far as they're concerned, oh, you're employed. You're employed. No, you count as part of the employed people. You're not part of the unemployment. No, sorry, but, you know, that's a minute misrepresentation of the numbers, you know?
And I would love to hear a really, really seriously true representation of a true poll from every individual out there, what they really thought. And I'm willing to go out on a limb to say that I would believe that the average Joe would be of the same mindset as all of us here, that we don't want no war with the next guy across the next continent. We want to have a barbecue with them. We want the same thing they want. We want to raise our children in peace, love, and hope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So why these guys are saying the average Joe? Can somebody add Rick into the conversation?
Yep, I'm pretty sure I have Rick floating on my friends list here.
While the average Joe's out there, trying to just survive in life, these politicians are up there going by these polls. Somebody up there manipulating the polls. We're not getting represented. There's no representation there. I want to hear a poll of the children. What do the children think? I want to hear the polls of the teenagers. What do the teenagers think? What does the average Joe think? Because to me, that's what really matters, is what the majority of all the people out there believe. You know, I still believe that it, for the most part, that they all are of the same mindset as we are. You know, they're lied to. They're manipulated. They're told whatever the corporations want to tell. You know, whatever's going to benefit that corporate pocketbook, then that's what's going to get said on TV. And that's a shame, because what they're doing, you know, as far as fattening their wallet up, is they're stealing. They are literally stealing from the future of humanity, because they're sending us down a path that, you know, is, the word is unsustainable. The word to me is total sure destruction. You know, it's blatantly obvious. You know, if you're driving off a cliff, there's only one option that's going to happen when you go off that cliff. It ain't going to be good. And so I believe what we're doing here, we're trying to steer the boat away from that cliff so that we don't go over that cliff, so that our children have an opportunity to even live a life in the future. Now, if that makes me nuts, and I'm just going to have to be nuts, because that's what my heart's filled with, you know?
Okay, so I've got a young Jonathan's statement here all sorted out.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, give me one second. Okay. I should say that they should be made to have to get done what they say they will do. And not just say all kinds of stuff that will get them elected. They should have an incentive to do it, like you don't get paid if you don't get it done. But in the end, if you do what you said you would get accomplished, then you would get superior rewarded. Like the rest of your life pension thing. If not, then you're back to the back to the level of us, and you have no way to redeem yourself. This you can always get thing. This way you can always get things done, and if you don't do what you say, you are going to, then you will be ostracized. Since everyone in this society seems focused on making themselves look good, then why not hold them up to it, eh?
Yeah, accountability. Yeah. Love it. Great words, Jonathan. Hey, how you doing there, Rick?
Hello, King Shazoos and Knights and Dame of the Round Table. How is everyone today?
Hi, hello.
The reason I wanted to intercede is, you know, I try to catch this every Sunday. You know, I love this show. And I love what it's all about. But the reason I want to intercede today is because the longer and longer I listen to the show, the more and more it is really sinking into my brain that this is all about language. This is all about the perception of language. People have had their perception skewed from the corporate media, from the splitting of the languages, which happened a long time ago. Because at one point, I do believe that there was just one language on this planet. And it was split apart, so communication was broken. And that communication has never been fixed since then.
The Tower of Babel?
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm not a religious person. Well, not a lot. I mean, I believe in God. I believe that there is unity in love and compassion. You know, not so much that there's this omnipotent being that watches over us and decides whether you live or you die, whether you succeed or you fail. You know, I think that's all our own control. That's under all of our own control. But I do believe that there is a higher power, whether that higher power is the collective mind, or whether that higher power is the universe itself. You know, that's debatable. But, you know, it's like, I mean, I put it in the chat a little while ago that when you say something to someone like, you know, we really need to get this done, we really need to help, you need to give till it hurts. People cringe when they hear give till it hurts. Because they've had this perception pounded into their mind, and that, you know, pain's not an option. Pain is a negative thing. Well, of course it is. But at the same time, though, I think what they're really trying to say is, if so, it doesn't hurt any longer. But these phrases have been put into our vocabulary and into our collective in order to keep us from being positive, from us being giving, because the giving side of us has been lost.
Well, and if you listen to the actual the banter back and forth between all the different political parties and entities that are actually in control of the system as far as supposedly our representation, their words are always divisive, you know. Racist is one of the biggest ones that I've seen. I can testify that a lot of my friends around, I don't see a racist bone in their body, but because of their political views, they would be labeled as a racist. You know, these words that are thrown out there, you know, just at random, basically by the fistful, are divisive. You know, if you're a Republican, you must be a warmonger. If you're a Democrat, you must be a stoner liberal or whatever, you know. These are all divide and conquer tactics, you know. You're a gun-toting, crazy, tinfoil hat-wearing nutcase if you believe in whatever, you know. So I can understand where you're coming from, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, and it does all boil down to language. I mean, You know, how do you learn to communicate when you are a toddler? You know, you cry. I mean, when you're a baby, you cry. That's your communication. And as we get older, we're taught our native language. And how we're taught our native language is changed by how we're educated.
Yeah, and we're also taught by society that a full-grown man can't cry. And a lot of full-grown men take that so much to heart that eventually they end up going behind the barn to cry, and before it's all over with, they put a bullet in their head. You know? So there's something to be said there.
Absolutely.
You know, I have to say that, Shaziz, the most heartfelt men I've been around, where it has just really touched me, is a man who cried in front of me. And who actually showed his feelings and not went and acted like he was so tough that he couldn't show his emotions.
Well, a lot of fathers make the sad mistake of having to believe that they're so tough that they got to be tough in front of their children. Never cry in front of your child because, you know, it shows weakness. But what it does to that child is tell that child, well, you know, I'm weak if I cry. You know, I got to be like Dad. And once again, you know, that's one of those chains that has to get broke. To me, okay, if you think I'm a wuss because every once in a while I hear a sad or a uplifting story and it brings a tear to my eye, then so be it. But in my heart, it tells me that there's a truth in there, and that truth is willing to show itself. And to me, you know, it takes a real man to cry in front of his lady friends or his men friends, either or. You know, that's just coming from my point of view.
There's a difference between crying from emotion and crying from being a big baby.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm talking about.
Whining. There's a big difference between whining, being a big baby, and actually showing your emotion and your heartfelt, something that either makes you very happy or something that makes you very sad.
But when your boy read that letter that he wrote from his heart, it brought a tear to my eye. And I'm not ashamed to say it. It brought a tear to my eye because what it is that what I believe that I put the Knights of the Round Table together for to begin with is what that boy said coming out of his mouth. It was the positive pebbles that will eventually ripple across the entire world and hopefully bring about really true peace. And, you know, that is a step forward towards the actual idea of the Knights of the Round Table to begin with, was to give people a platform to which they could speak their heart, they could speak their mind in a respectful manner to one another. And if it comes from the mouths of the babes, then we're one step closer to making this world a better place.
And their babes are so honest anyways. You know, they have their own honesty.
Yep.
You know, they don't know a lot of times any different.
You know,
so it's nice to hear from them.
At the end of the day, the power is in our hands, literally, to change this world. The power is in our hands. We're spiritual beings. We're energy beings. We're amazing creatures. Whether you believe we were created by God or evolved from a slug in the water or whatever, we are amazing creatures that have such wonderful gifts that were given to us by however it got here, that we have opportunities that are of epic proportions. We got two paths we can go down. We can go down the right path, or we can go down the wrong path. We can either destroy all of humanity, or we can literally create a heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak. I know I keep saying that, and it sounds like a pipe dream, a world away from the reality that we actually are faced with on a daily basis, but think about what would actually occur if we were to get this ball rolling in such a fashion that it affected the entire world and they stopped for long enough just to think, should I pull the trigger on this gun? Or should I put this damn gun down and start gardening and grow some plants for my neighbors, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we starting in our generation, I believe, and, you know, I'm saying that I'm 53, you know, I'll be 53 in a couple months. I believe we're the new breed. I believe we are the ones that are going to change everything. We are the ones that are going to fix what's wrong. But it's taking its time. It's going to be a slow process. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. But to get this thought out and to get these intentions, these positive, loving intentions out, is the real key to changing the paradigm we live in right now. I really believe that.
I agree with you. And one other thing that needs to be said is that, in my religious beliefs, it actually talks about seeds. Actually, has a couple of parables in there from Jesus that has a few things that talks about seeds. But we physically may never see the fruits of our labor, what we're doing right here. But the fruits of our labor comes in knowing that when we leave this earth, we left something good behind, a piece of positivity that will bear fruit in the future, that our future children and our children's children's children can enjoy and possibly potentially live in that heaven on earth, that utopia, so to speak. If we don't plant these seeds now, it will never get done. We will never break the chains. We will never break the chains of that child that said, I don't want peace with Israel because they killed my mom and they killed my dad. Those will be the future warriors that will come back and kill somebody else's mom and dad. And so we need to break those chains by putting these seeds in the ground and bearing the fruit that in the future will make a difference regardless of whether we get to enjoy it or not.
I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm perfectly fine with not being here to see the end result.
That's what we're all here for, mate. I think we all do this for the hope that, you know, future generations are the ones who benefit from it. We kind of know that we're screwed. So, well, things aren't going to change in the immediate for us, and that's a given. You know?
No, but we do know that it is changing. You can see it in small pockets all around the world. It is changing.
Mm-hmm.
People are starting to open their eyes and actually see what is going on this planet.
Well, in my book, any step forward...
You get enough people to say it's enough.
In my book, any step forward is better than 10 steps back, and we've been taking a lot of 10 steps back because the majority of the population's out here spending their time bickering back and forth amongst each other as opposed to finding the solutions and doing something about it. You know, Cultus and I... We started off an idea for virtual labs, and to me that is a huge step forward as opposed to, you know, because we're into alternative energy, and we seriously believe that we can one day prove free energy to the world beyond a shadow of a doubt. That's our beliefs, and that's our love as far as the alternative energy community. But there's other things out there that need solutions to be found, you know, such as our education for our children and the ways that we raise our children and the things that we allow, you know, them to see and such. You know, so there's a lot of work to be done by a lot of individuals out there, but I'm a firm believer that, you know, it's not going to get done unless we, right now, while we're in this time, in this reality, we plant those seeds to make that future, real. What more can I say?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why myself, Gina Turcotte, and... Tim Kasson created the Maine Tennis Justice League. You know, we got to do something about the homeless population. What are we going to do about the homeless population? It just keeps growing and growing and growing. And the landlords that are out there are only out there to get the money, and that's it. They don't care about your welfare. They don't care about your well-being. They don't care if you have a good roof over your head that is going to sustain you and your family. All they care about, the bottom line, is the dollar for them. And if you can't pay that dollar, you are out on the street.
I deal with that here in this house because we, you know, my parents rent it. And their landlords, if we have an issue, they're like, oh, well, we didn't use that room, so, you know, sorry. Really?
Oh.
Is that how you... This is a huge house that is going to waste away. You know, there are people living in it, and you're just going to let it go? And that was something I was going to say earlier. You know, I see all these places being tore down, and it just kills me. The places that are empty already. why don't we say, okay, you cannot have this lease for this building because we have all these other buildings that are empty. Let's do that. Let's not tear down more land.
I hear a lot of...
Let's build on this one.
I hear a lot of individuals blaming God for everything bad in the world. They say, well, you know, if God was this loving God, why would he allow this? Why would he allow that? And essentially, I keep coming back to the same thing. You know, there was 10 commandments down there that said, you know, thou shalt not kill. You know, it wasn't no ifs, ands, or buts. But regardless of whether you believe in God or not, if you walk past that homeless man sitting on the side of the road and you do nothing, that was your choice. That wasn't of God. God didn't tell you to walk past that homeless man and not at least try to give him a blanket or a sandwich. You chose to do that. And so, ultimately, I feel that the responsibility lies on the individual of the choices that you make on a daily basis. And just think about what it would be like if everyone out there made a good positive choice on a daily basis. You know, I'll let you guys run with that. That's all I can say. I mean, in my mind, in my heart, it's common sense. But maybe common sense isn't so common anymore.
Well, I agree with that, Shazishka. I mean, we've been blessed with one of the greatest gifts ever, which is free will. Free will. It is up to us to decide whether we walk past this homeless person and ignore him, or whether we walk up to this homeless person and lift him up off the ground. It's up to us, and it's free will.
Yep.
I used to volunteer at the homeless shelter. Then, ironically, I was living at the homeless shelter.
And that's okay, because, you know, not that it's okay. I really hate that you had to live there or go through that. But you knew, because you work there, right? You knew what
knew
what they were going through.
Yeah, there's a
perspective on, you know, it's one thing to work there and have a nice place to live. It's a whole other thing to actually live in that environment. So that's an experience you've now had. You now know what it feels like to be one of those people, even though you're no longer in that position. We know that, but you know, it's I've lived on the streets. I've lived in children's homes. I've lived in refuges. You know, homeless shelter, same type of thing. You know, it's an experience. It was horrible at the time, but there's no way I'd ever give it back.
One thing to be pointed out:
I wouldn't be me now if it wasn't
for those times.
One thing to be pointed out is you never know how that other individual's life really is until you've walked a mile in their shoes. And I know that sounds like a cliche phrase, but fact is, I've never walked in Coltus's shoes. I've never walked in Jonathan's shoes. But the thing that I've learned from listening to them is that they learned something valuable. There's a couple good-hearted individuals that those miles that they walked in those shoes, that made the people that I'm listening to, that I'm talking to, that I call my friends right now.
Absolutely. I know as a mother, a single mother, what it's like to at a time in your life where you can't feed your kids, and you do what you have to do to get that. And I know what that's like. I'm thankful and I'm very blessed that I have a family that loves me so much that they took me in, or I would still be living in my leaking camper right now.
I can relate to that. I live with my sister and her husband and my nephew and his wife. I mean, and they all live together, you know, and they invited me into their home. And they didn't have to do that. If it wasn't for them, I would be out on the street again.
Yeah.
So with that said, you know, you got the choice. When you walk past that homeless guy, are you going to stop and you're going to lift him up like Rick said, or are you going to walk on by and just pretend it didn't happen? You know, it's not in my circle. It doesn't affect me. If I give this guy money, he's only going to buy drugs anyway. That's what society would want you to believe. But maybe that guy's just looking for that extra piece of humanity that tells him that life is worthwhile. Life is, you know, there's something good out there. There's a total stranger, doesn't know me from Adam, just came up and gave me a sandwich, you know. And you know, maybe you could say, granted, this guy might just take advantage. He might play on everybody's heart, but I'd rather somebody play on my heart than they play, you know, on all the negativity that runs in this world, and it just perpetuates like that child story that I told you about where the little girls were saying, I don't want peace with Israel because they killed my mom, they killed my dad. When does it ever stop? That continuous cycle can either be a continuous cycle of love or it can be a continuous cycle of I'm going to get even with you.
Well, I mean, you know, you can see it in the media too. I mean, what kind of shows do you see on television? You see shows about the glorification of war. You see shows about the glorification of competition. You see shows about the glorification of money. I mean, they want to make these things the things that are important to us, not the things that are really important, which are love and compassion for our fellow human beings, which is unity, which is bringing out the positive and pushing away the negative. They want to keep this negative cycle going over and over and over again. Oh, you know, Time Life has new World War II videos. Hey, better get them, you know, before they're all gone.
Well, one thing that the negativity does is, number one, it destroys humanity. Number two, it fattens the wallet of those greedy suckers at the top. And, you know, I'm not against somebody being filthy, stinking rich if they've earned a decent living. But if, you know, at the end of the day, when they built their stairway to heaven, they're not taking any of that with them. And so my question to them would be the same question I would be asking myself before the elite in my profound letter of peace to the world is, what have I done to serve humanity? What have I done to serve my family, myself, and my God according to my own spiritual beliefs? What have I done? What accomplishments have I made in my life? Has my life been a combination of nothing but I go through destroying and taking and taking and taking? Have I ever given enough back to make a difference to this world to allow my children and your children to have a decent chance at a future?
Or what have I started that I haven't tried to finish? You know, some people start things and don't finish them. And that's what is really on my heart right now, is that this letter, it happens, however many it is, even if it's one or two. You know, we've got one already.
We've got to make it.
Even if it's one or two.
We've got to make it to the finish line. We've got to, if we have to crawl across that finish line and hand that letter to him personally, by God, it has to be done.
That's right.
Because the alternative is, I've seen it, the alternative is bad.
Yeah.
So, Archie, we will win this, mate.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, we work too hard not to, mate. You, myself, and the rest of the knights and the dames of the round table, we all have too much heart and there's too much fight in us to step down and let it continue the way it's been going, mate. We have the guts and we intend to make a difference, no matter how small or how big.
Mm-hmm. And the commitment.
We've got the commitment to do it. And we have. And, you know, Virtual Labs is perfect proof of that. You know, we decided we were going to do something, and we weren't like a bunch of the others out there who just yap. We got it done, and we've got it. It's a couple of weeks off going live. Ken's just ironing out a few of the minor details, but anyone can go over and have a look at virtuallabs.us. The site is there, the labs are there, the connections are there. It's just a couple of little things that need modification, and we're good to go.
I don't
There's
want it.
The really good thing is, Shaziv, also, and everybody, is that there is many of us here, so when one may get discouraged, you have plenty of others to be beside you.
I don't want
and to say, it's okay.
I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my horn, but for those of you out there who truly know me, you know that I'm a man of my word and I'm a man of character, and I made a promise to everybody out there, you know, via the internet with my voice, with my, you know, radio shows and my YouTube, I made a promise to do some couple things, and one of which was that I promised that, you know, in, as long as I have a breath in this body of mine, you know, I will continue to repeat and repeat over and over again whatever it takes to throw as many positive pebbles out there, hug as many people, smile upon my brothers and sisters of the world as much as I possibly can, because the ultimate payback for me isn't financial gain. The ultimate payback for me is to be able to look in my grandbaby's eyes and know that I did something. I did, even if it was as small as you could possibly imagine, I did something that I believe was going to make a better world for them. And that is the whole definition behind the word shaziz.
And being able to look in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
being able to look in the mirror and be proud of who you are, be happy with who you are.
That's right, because I can look in the mirror and I can look in the mirror and my face not break into a million pieces because I'm ashamed of what we're doing.
Right.
I look in the mirror and my face shines. My heart is bright.
Well, I'm gonna tell you,
so is yours, just is.
I'm going to tell you, I know that if this was wrong, it would not have lasted as long. You can't hide your true colors. Year after year that we've been doing all this stuff and saying what we've been saying, if we were wrong, it would have crashed. It would have crashed and burned so long ago, because people, you know, after a while would get to understanding, you know, hey, look, these guys said this, these guys said that, and nothing ever came to pass. Cultists and I, we've got virtual labs on the, it's ready. It's minus a few bugs, it's ready. And all these words of encouragement have been immortalized for all to see in the world, all to listen and hear, and all they have to do is pick it up and listen to it, you know. They can see how we feel, and then they can say how they feel on the Knights of the Round Table, and, you know, what more can you do?
We're doing it.
So, folks, you know, it looks like we're really seriously coming down to the wire, and as wonderful as this show is, and it keeps getting better every time, we've got some wonderful nights that come around here. We got Thomas and Jonathan and Rick and Cultist and Shannon, our dame with the Knights of the Round Table. By golly, we need more dames, so get on the doggone Skype and join in with Shannon. She needs some backup so we can keep old King Shaziz the Terrible under control, because he's liable to say anything.
You know what, Shaziz? I know that we have more dames out there. They just may not be able to get on. And I, you know, I do give a shout out to all of them. But, you know, we're all here.
Well, just so that they know,
there's a lot of them out there.
Just so that they know, there is a seat reserved for them at the table at their own pace.
Absolutely.
They can show up when they show up, because we're not stopping. And we hope that once we get too old to do this show, we hope that kids like Jonathan will take over the Knights of the Round Table and keep the ball rolling. Because, you know, like I said, we would plant the seeds that we may not actually get to see them come to fruition and be able to enjoy the fruits of our labor. But if Jonathan takes over and his friends takes over the Knights of the Round Table, then what we've done is not in vain. And what we've done is something that will pave the future stones for the future generations of the world and make the world a better place. And, man, I'm telling you, I'm just, I'm overwhelmed by it all. But we better go around the table real quick, because we're down to the last 5 minutes, so... Anybody got any last words? Starting ladies first.
Yes, stand strong, everybody. Stand strong. Put your heels in the ground. And we'll all make it.
Who's up next?
And if we don't, we sure will go down trying.
Yes, we will. Who's up
love
next?
You all.
Thomas, are you there?
I guess I'll go.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
I just wanted to say thanks to the Knights of the Round Table for helping me get out of that life that I was in, and bringing me to Muddy's.
Don't forget Dame of the Knights of the Round Table too. She's
yeah. And do
we haven't heard from Mitko there. Are you still there, you brother? Sure? Stop.
He'll type. He'll type it out, and we'll say it for him.
What about my buddy Cultus?
Cultus,
unmute
where
your
are
mic,
you?
Brother.
Have I been sitting here talking this whole time with my mic muted?
Yes, you have.
I wonder why everyone's just been ignoring me. How rude.
I did that earlier, too.
I said I'd go last. So, Rick, do you have any final words there, buddy?
Yeah, sure. Just make love and compassion your base, and be strong, believe in yourself, and we will achieve what we're working for. We really will. Just have love in your heart and compassion for your fellow man. That's all I really want to say. I love you guys.
Well said. What more can you say, Cultus?
Well, you know, be a giver, you know, wholeheartedly and unconditionally and without expectation of receiving it back. Be a giver. Give what you can. Don't leave yourself short. But give what you can. If you see a brother in need or a sister in need, give. Help them in any way you can, if you can. You know, you might be able to, you know, give them $100. You might be able to help them out with a loaf of bread. Whatever your limitation, help those you can. Don't sit back and wait for somebody else to do it. Don't think, you know, I don't want to approach that person. I might bite my head off. Help. Help with everything you can, and life will be good for all of us. If everyone can help one person, then no one's going to need for anything.
Well, that's well said there, Cultus. I don't know if Thomas is in there or what, but I'm sure
Thomas has fallen away there.
Okay, well, we know.
No, it's just Dublin. Dublin, are you there, mate? I'm mute and have your final say, buddy, for once.
Dublin? Well,
maybe his tea is
aliens got him.
Both Dublin and Thomas are some wonderful, good-hearted individuals, and they got a lot to say. And you know, we're crunching the numbers down here now, and we'll be cutting into somebody else's time. But you know, thanks to everybody out there listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned and bring your friends. Get ready for the virtual labs, and don't forget the pop boat contest, and you know, support those out there who you know are supporting you, such as the Knights of the Round Table and all these different networks that we rebroadcast through. Because at the end of the day, using your phrase again, Cultus, I can't help myself. It's a good one.
You can have it, mate.
But you know,
use it even more than me.
What we do today, we'll make tomorrow. For everybody. So with that said, thanks for being with the Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love to everybody. Take care.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Oh, who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Ho, ho, ho! To survive the terror! To fill the table and the knights of the round table.